Mr. Pittman, reel 4. Now, we're talking about your time on HMS Hood as a fourth acting and then fourth officer. What about when you went to sea on exercises, what was it like your first time at sea with the Hood?
Well, I think I was very excited. If I wasn't seasick, I never was seasick in my life. I think I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean,
and what would happen? What sort of exercise did you go on? Was it just local to Portsmouth and then back or...?
At first it was just locally until we'd worked up. And then we went north to... we went north to Ross Ice and Scarpa Flow to work up there with the fleet.
The home fleet?
Yeah.
This is before the outbreak of war?
Oh yes, that wasn't until September, was it?
And what sort of working up exercises did you do with?
Well, we used to steam up through the into the Denmark Straits and things like that, and carry all sorts of exercises, fleet manoeuvres.
And what about routine at sea? That this would be where the watch system would come in. Is it?
No, we never worked watches.
The EA, the engineer artist. Ordnance artillery.
We only used to go if it was action stations or cruising stations.
We'll come to that, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
So your routine at sea was pretty well the same as in harbour.
Yes, yes. Unless I had a big job on, and I had to work in the evening, the evening was fine.
Well, I haven't asked you about the workshop. Did you have a workshop? I mean, you went to the turret to work. Mm. There's two parts to that. One, what sort of a toolkit did you have? And the second part is, What sort of a workshop did you
have? Your toolkit normally consisted of files, hacksaw, pliers, spanners, mostly adjustable spanners, because in turrets a lot were specialised spanners, like castellated spanners and all sorts of clawfoot spanners. And
what are they?
Spanner that comes down like that.
Oh, what, it bends halfway down?
Yeah, well, no, it's just comes down like that with a spanner head on the end there. For getting it in enclosed spaces. We often used to get into trouble for using what we called a brummaging spanner.
What's that?
Hammer and chisel. We used to put it on the corner and that hit it. I always remember Brigham Young said to me once, he leant over the tower and he said, Bing? I said, "Did you come and see me when you finish work with him?" So I went to see him, and he said, "What was the size of that nut you were butchering with a hammer and chisel?" I said, 5'8", chief. "Why?" He said, "You'll find some hexagon bar under the lathe," he said. "Make 2 dozen 5'8" nuts before we go short today," he said. "That'll teach you not to butcher them, and they've plenty of spares."
Would it damage them, hitting them with hammer and chisel?
Yeah, because it took the corners off and you couldn't get a spanner on them.
And so, anything else in the toolkit?
Well, I know when the Byron went down, we all claimed to have had micrometers, which not many of us did, because they were expensive. But, hammers, chisels, spanners, files. That was about all you needed.
Now, what about the ship's workshop
the ship's workshop? You normally had a lathe.
Was it an ordnance artificer's
workshop? Oh yes, ordnance artificer's workshop. The A's had theirs next door and so on.
So they had a lathe.
A lathe, a milling machine, a power drill, probably a grinding wheels to sharpen tools with. Power grinding mills, that is. Grinding, I think we had a grinding machine, if I remember rightly, too. And the benches and voices fitting.
And so quite heavy equipment.
Oh, yes. Mm.
And what would you do in the thing? And what would you do in the workshop as opposed to in the actual turret?
Well, if you had to make a new piece to go somewhere, like turn something up.
A new piece?
Well,
piece of piping, or
could be perhaps a damaged piston or something. You'd have to go and make another one. or a boat, but you never had a spare oil valve, you couldn't make a boat.
So that's when you'd go back there and...
Yeah, oh yeah.
Was it far from you? Where was it? I should have asked, where was the workshop?
Well, ours was, if I remember rightly, I would say it was about midships. On, what, the second deck down.
What was it? I mean, it was a very big ship. I mean, would you know your way about it? From top to bottom?
I can tell you this, that after I'd been on there nearly 2 years, I met somebody. And I said, hello, you just joined? He said, no, I've been on here since we commissioned the port. People often ring me up now and say, I understand you were on the hood. So yes. I wonder if you would have known so-and-so and so-and-so. I said, look, the hood had a crew of 1,500 people. I said, apart from your own sort of workmates, you didn't really know anybody else.
So you only really knew the artificers, well, the ordnance. Would you know the other artificers, the engineers, the electricians?
Knew some of them.
In your mess?
Yeah, well, yeah. Wouldn't know the ROs because they had their own mess. But the EAs, you'd know them because you often worked with them because they worked on the transmitting station as well, electronics.
So you know them. What about, would you know your way around the ship? I mean, what I mean is, would you ever have any reason to go into the engine rooms or forward or on the superstructure? I mean, would you just know your turret and the way to and from your mess deck?
Oh, yeah, you'd walk around the ship, yes. I don't never used to go down the engine room. I haven't been down there once. I didn't want to go down there again.
Was it a happy ship? And can you comment on what for you a happy ship or unhappy ship was?
Yes, it was a very happy ship. The captain was Captain Glennie.
Glennie. What was he like? We'll talk about him first then.
A very fair man. Much admired by the crew.
Why? Did you see what I mean?
He was a strict disciplinarian, but I don't think he was ever unfair. He had steel grey eyes, and if you went before him as a requestman, he used to look at you and pierce right through, and you almost dropped. I don't know what would have happened if you really fought her. I think you probably died on the spot.
Not something ever happened to you then?
No.
And what about other senior officers, his executive officer perhaps?
Well, the gunnery officer you knew quite well.
You mentioned him before.
And the commander, I suppose. I can't. What was the commander's name? I can't think of his name.
Were they a good bunch of officers? I mean, overall.
Yes, very good.
And what about ship's morale? You know, crew morale. What was it like? Was
very good. She had a very good name. She used to win regattas and that sort of thing. You know.
And who was responsible for the morale? Was that the captain, you think, or was it just fortunate? Or was it
the captain, the commander, or the officers downwards, I think. They were all good officers. You know.
Was it a comfortable ship to serve on, you know?
Yes, it was, yeah. Except if you were in a hot climate, because she had no portholes. And she was known as the TB ship.
There was a problem with TB, was there?
There must have been, I think, but I never came across any case of it.
So you went up to Scapa, well, to Rosyth Scapa,
yeah.
And you were doing exercises off Denmark Straits and such, with the home fleet.
Mm.
And then what after that?
Oh, well, then we went down to Gibraltar. And then I don't quite remember what happened next.
What was it like at Gibraltar?
Oh, well, of course, it was very nice going ashore for the first time. They had a... Drink was very cheap there. They had a pub there called the Boiled Oil Shop, which you got a port and brandy for 4D. Very good food, cheap food. Could buy anything there, very cheap. And if you went across to Spain, it was very cheap over there. And if you went into bars, you never had to buy any food because you used to get a big schooner of sherry. I think it was for 4D. And they used to give you a big slice of bread and meat with it. So, well, you'd had your meal and you'd had your drink.
Did Brigham Young warn you against drink as well? Or?
No, I don't know.
You were getting to like a drink from the sound of it?
Yes, I still like a drink. And I'm 83 and I enjoy a drink. I enjoy whiskey and ginger.
How drunk would you get at the time with your chums or, you know?
Well, we never got had enough to get into trouble, no. We could always go back aboard decently.
So just a solid drink?
That's fine, yeah. I don't understand them nowadays. All I ever wanted to do when I had too much to drink was go to sleep.
So, and you drink the local drinks? You know, you obviously drank the sherry and...
Sherry and beer, yeah.
And did you have any special mates aboard ship, you know, that you hung round with?
Yes, Roberts was the other chap who joined me. I think we were all, we used to go ashore in sort of gangs, you know, and all the OAs and that sort of thing.
So there was no bullying in the crew, no unpleasantness?
No, none at all, no. No, Brigham Young and Harry Burgess, they were both very nice men, both chiefs.
What about the seamen and the stokers? I mean, you were, you know, and the rest, you know, because the ship's very divided up, isn't it? You were tiffies and the seamen, the stokers. How did you all get on together in that way? Was there any friction? There's sometimes friction between seamen and stokers for a start. But
No, not really, no.
It was pretty happy, correct?
Yeah.
And what's after Gibraltar, do you remember?
Well, only going ashore and seemed strange to be in a foreign port, you know, for the first time. And stuff was so cheap. And I say we took the chief's advice and went across the border, which served a good purpose. But
and what next after Gibraltar?
Well, we came back and then I'm not sure when. I think we called at Portsmouth again. And then we went up north again on them to join the fleet, and we went out on exercises again. And then we came back to Invergordon on the 2nd of September, and we were getting ready to go ashore. I had my number one suit on, ready to go ashore, and waiting for the Liberty boat. And all of a sudden, over the loudspeaker, they said, "Do you hear there? All leave is cancelled. The following signal has been received from the Admiralty. Prepare for war. At all haste, the ship will proceed to Scarpa Flow." So all that night we steamed to Scarpa Flow, and we spent all night preparing the ship for war, fusing the shells and whatnot.
What exactly preparation? So that was the second you had this warning, was it?
Yeah, the prepare for war, yeah.
And what preparations did you make?
Well, they got up here, as I've said, the ready-use ammunition, which I'd forgotten before. And fuse the shells, put the fuses in.
What different type of shell fuses would you have? Can you run through that part? Because we haven't talked about shell fuses yet.
Well, there would be the armour piercing shell. That had a base fuse, if I remember rightly, and it had an armoured head. The idea of being able to hit the armoured belt, crack the armoured belt, and then penetrate. And then explode. So that was a sort of time fuse. And then you had the instant fuse, which went off as soon as the shell hit. That was actually a sort of shrapnel. And of course, for the aircraft, you had the time fuse, which you set to burst at a certain height.
Did you have to be careful with these fuses? I mean, could they, you know, could they go off, or were they completely...
No. They weren't activated until the shell actually spun.
How was that done? What sort of mechanism was that?
Well, in the fuse it was sort of a clockwork mechanism, but the shell, of course, had a... Do you know anybody? The shell had a copper band around it, when you rammed it with this hydraulic rammer into the garden, the copper soft copper band bit into the screwed rifling. So as the shell travelled down the barrel, it spun.
And that's what triggered the fuse.
Fuse, yes.
So next time it hit something, it went off.
That's right.
So that's one preparation. What are the preparations?
Getting ready, getting out the cord out ready to go, you know, from the magazine. Not sending it up, but getting it all ready to go. Making sure the guns were all working, you know.
So, but that was the test you normally did.
Yeah.
How did you feel yourself, you know, because the Hood was quite likely to be involved in any fighting there was.
Oh, yeah,
I know. It was, yes. How did you feel? I mean, were you nervous? How did, you know?
I was always nervous until the first shot was fired, and I was all right.
Why were you nervous? I mean, what was it that made...
Well, I suppose it was tension.
Did it used to worry you in between, you know, beforehand?
Not really, no. Not until the danger of Bismarck came along and I suddenly remembered about Josh.
Now, what happened next then? You went to Scapa with the Home Fleet.
Mm.
What happened next
then? Well, then we used to go out on Northern Patrols for about 10 days at a time.
What would the Northern Patrols be like?
Up through the Denmark Straits. Could get pretty rough at times. I say we used to go straight through it. Often the Admiral used to send Admiral Whitworth or something. He used to send the destroyers back. And Hood, you say destroyers return to harbour, Hood carry on. She was a marvel of sea boats, no doubt about that.
And what about, was it, I mean, she didn't go through it, but did it leak at all? I mean, because some of these ships did used to leak.
Oh, yes, the shipwrights used to spend all their time punching oakum into the hatches to stop them leaking.
And did it have, I'm not sure if it had a secondary armament, did it leak through the secondary armament, the 6-inch guns?
She never had 6-inch guns.
What was the armour? Sorry, that's very foolish of me, but...
5.5.
Would they leak or were they on deck?
They were on deck.
They weren't the sort of side ones?
No, they were just on deck. No, they weren't... what are they called? Broadside guns like the Barham and whatnot had. They were actual proper gun mountings on the upper deck.
Did you have much... You wouldn't have much to do with them? You weren't attacked on the 5.5s?
No, I wasn't on the 5.5s.
So, would water get below decks much, or just through these hatches then?
Sometimes it used to get a little down there, but of course, around all the hatchways, you had quite high combings to stop it going down the hatches.
And anything happen ever on these Northern patrols?
Oh, we had a scare once, but it turned out to be one of our own ships, and we were just going to open fire on it. It was a cruiser.
What exactly happened? Do you remember?
I forget the name of the cruiser now. We challenged her in the dark and she didn't answer. And we were just going to open fire on her and she did answer. It turned out to be she'd been damaged off Norway and was making her way back.
Anything else happen?
No, we had several reports of ships sighted, but we never came in contact with any of them. And I'll say sometimes we used to go on patrol with the Strasbourg. With the French Admiral in command. She was senior to her, I think.
And she was also on Northern Patrols, was she? Or was this?
Yes, she used to come on Northern Patrols. But
how did you get on with the crew?
Well, we never met the crew because we never went ashore with them. Because she never used to return to Scapa Flow. She used to go back to a French port.
But you felt reasonably affectionate to her. The point of this will come with Iran, obviously. But you had a link with that ship, the Strasbourg.
Well, yes, we did. We considered it to be our chummy ship.
So, what happened next then? How were you settling into the sort of shipboard routine? Was it hard work, 10 days out, back?
No, when you were out then in the war, of course, you did do watchkeeping.
Tell me about you'd be at action stations when you were out, would you?
No, not full action, what they called cruising stations.
What was cruising station? What was your cruising station? How did it work?
Well, half the gun's crew was closed up at any one time. And the OAs took it in turns to carry out watches through the night. I mean, you would either have the first dog or the second dog, that was 4 to 6 or 6 to 8, or the first watch, which was 8 to 12, or the middle watch, which was midnight to 4 o'clock, or the morning watch, 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock. If you had the middle watch, you had to make amends the next day, the afternoon.
So if you're on cruising stations, I mean, it stopped being like a working day as it was in peacetime, and it became, you were up and someone was on the guns all the time already.
Yeah, according but to we weren't.
But yeah, not necessarily you, but who would the other OA be? Who sort of, do you see what I mean? When you weren't on watch, who would be on watch in your gun? Ordnance Artist Research.
Oh, well, of course, you'd go to action station immediately, send it to action station.
But who would be on cruising stations? You know, at night, when if you weren't on, who was on?
Part of the crew. Say one gun's crew in a twin turret, it would be one gun.
No, but who would be the OA?
It wouldn't be an OA then.
So, all right. Mm. So it'd just be the gun crew. And
yeah.
And what about action stations? So what was the difference there? Well, that was...
You were all closed up. Mm. You all closed up at one time.
How did you? What was the signal for action stations, and what would happen when it was called?
Sound the bugle call. There used to be a bugle call for repel aircraft and a bugle call for action stations. It used to be quite thrilling when you heard that.
And were the bugle calls transmitted electronically, or no, were there lots
over,
of over
the
bugles? So they'd stopped having a bugler on every landing and things. Mm. Would you be called out often to action stations? Or just on occasion, like when you met this other ship?
Well, if there was any sort of thing came up, anything in the vicinity, until you'd identified what it was. First. Oh, yes, you just often get called to action stations.
Would they still have the thing of changing, you know, changing your underwear and putting on a certain kit, or a dough like that?
Oh yes, we used to wear flash gear.
What was the flash gear? Tell me
about
that.
It was a hood went over your head, and gauntlets.
And what about anything else, over the body, or was it just the hood and
no,
the gauntlets?
No, just that. And you were advised to wear clean underwear at all times.
That was in case of infection if you were wounded.
That's right. Yes.
The hood and the gauntlets, what were they made of?
Some sort of asbestos material, I should imagine.
And did they restrict your movement? Because, I mean, thinking of your job, you...
No, they were quite thin, actually. They didn't restrict it very much. If we were doing anything, we used to take it off.
And anything else about this period on Northern Patrols? Anything you recall?
No, we didn't... come up with anything about anything exciting?
A period of routine. What was life like in Scapa? Was it, or were you going back to Invergordon?
Oh, we used to go back to Scapa. We used to go over to the wet canteen in Scapa.
What was that like? Because some people have said it's a, you know, Scapa's not a favourite place. What was it like?
Well, you used to have what they called sods operas, which was crew members and whatnot would entertain. You had some jolly good comedians among them, and the bottles of beer was mostly from Canada. And I always remember it said on the bottle, "This beer does not. This beer contains 10% wood alcohol." And a lot of people regretted that when they got outside in the cold. It was all right when you were in the warmth of the canteen. Mm-hmm. But when you go out in the cold, your feet used to lose a sick.
This canteen was at Hoxha, was it? Or
what's the main island there?
It's on the main island.
Mm.
And
Flotta, wasn't it?
Flotta, right. And was it a sort of big, was it packed full? What was the atmosphere like in there?
Oh, very good. It was full of smoke and... everyone having a jolly good time, laughing and joking. And
it was a friendly atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, very friendly.
Were there fights and, you know...
Not when I was on the hood. There was when I was on the Glasgow, but...
And how would you get back to the ship? What was the Liberty boat
arrangement? Liberty boats to take you back. Well, they were actually trawlers. They didn't belong to the ship. They were just trawlers going around the fleet acting as Liberty boats.
And which order? How did you know which order of ships they were going? Would they all? You just have to sit on and wait your turn.
That's right.
And what state would most of them be in? They'd be you, sort of slightly tipsy, but not too drunk.
Well, as long as you could get up the ladder and onto the quarterdeck and salute the quarterdeck and walk aft, the officer of the watch wouldn't take any notice. But if, of course, you were tipsy and celibate and couldn't look after yourself, they used to put you in the cells for your own safety.
Now, you never failed that test?
No.
But would some of the others?
Oh, yes, often somebody used to get put in the cells overnight.
And was there anything else to do in Scapa?
We used to row and fish.
Would you have any regattas during that time? Or
no, just rowing for exercise. We used to fish. I always remember catching mackerel at Scapa was, getting honey from a honeycomb. You just dropped your hook.
Would you just do it over the side?
Just over the side, yeah.
Were you allowed to do that?
Oh, yes. I didn't mind. And the only thing was, it's 10 to 1, you wouldn't get the mackerel on board anyway. A seagull would have it before you got it.
A what?
A seagull would have it before you got it. Or shite hawks, as we used to call them. Well, we used to say that the spirits are dockyard mates. The brain colour, the brain tinted ones were the chargemen. But we used to play darts down the mess, cards, used to have a solo school and all that sort of thing.
Were you much of one for cards and gambling?
Not gambling. Well, we used to have a solo school, but it was only for sort of halfpennies at a time, or sometimes cigarettes.
Were there more serious gamblers?
Not that I came across.
No crown and anchor. I know it was illegal, but sometimes there is some.
I never came across one, no.
And what other recreations? Would you have a library and things
like that? Well, we had a cinema.
Cinema on board?
Well, we could see a film.
Would there be up-to-date films, or lagging behind a few years?
No, they were fairly up-to-date.
How many could get? Was that a big cinema?
No, not all that big, but get quite a few in there, yeah.
And library? Were you a reader?
Yes, you could get a library, yes. Go and get books. Yeah.
And did you?
Yes, I used to read quite a lot.
Were you developing your interest still in naval history? Was there a sort of naval...
Well, yes. I've been interested in naval history since I was at the artificer school. I used to read... I like biographies, you know.
So you read any other recreations?
I used to do a lot of fencing. I used to go down the quarterdeck and fence with some of the officers. So.
That must have been quite unusual for lower deck. You know, I mean, I know you were a fourth officer, but quite unusual for fences amongst the...
Yes, I made quite a lot of friends when I was at the Med on the Bermuda. The Lieutenant Colonel, he was the commander of the 4th Commando. He used to come aboard Special Defence for me.
So it was quite a useful thing.
And I used to...
What about when you were at Scapa? Would you, I mean, eventually, if you fired the guns enough on exercises and, you know, they'd have to replace the barrel, or would they replace the barrel, or could they replace the tube, inner tube, if you see what I mean?
No, because that was shrunken. The making of a 15-inch gun was about the inner O tube. Then you had the outer O tube, which was shrunk. The tube was in steps, and one was shrunk onto the other. And then you had miles and miles of quarter-inch wire wrapped around the outer O tube. And then this was covered by the B-tube, and then the jacket.
So, when a gun was worn out, what would happen?
They'd have to dismantle the whole gun and change the gun.
Which wouldn't be your job?
Oh, no. That's a doctor.
Would that happen very often?
No, not... I don't remember it happening when I was on the hood.